This podcast was recorded Thursday, October 22nd at 10:43 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like someone will out-embarrass Jeffrey Toobin from The New Yorker or Rudy Giuliani from his meeting with Borat.
Yes.
Is that possible?
I don't think so. But it's 2020. You never know.
Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and those shrewd Snollygosters working hard to get your vote in the final days of an election. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, Karl Rove is back in Ohio politics. But first, we are finally in the home stretch of an election colored by the ongoing pandemic.
Yeah, it is election season now more than it is election day. Early voting continues at a brisk pace. As of this week, 1.1 million Ohioans have either sent in absentee ballots or cast votes in person. That's 119% more than did at this point in 2016. 440,000 people have voted in person. That's a 266% increase compared to this time in 2016.
Yeah, about 2.7 million Ohioans have requested absentee ballots. That's about a third of all of Ohio's registered voters here in the Buckeye State. Most of those absentee requests are coming from unaffiliated voters who have not voted in a primary, but Democrats hold a lead over Republicans when it comes to the early voting.
And as we have reported throughout the election season, there have been some ongoing issues, also some recent issues and changes. Here are just a couple. An absentee ballot maker was overwhelmed by the demand. Nine counties have now parted ways with Midwest Direct over delays and are printing and distributing their own ballots at this point. The company blamed delays on unprecedented demand, but they say they are now caught up.
Yeah, and Secretary of State Frank LaRose has given counties a new deadline. The new deadline is November 18th to have all of their ballots counted. That's 6 days earlier than the maximum, but he says that extra padding gives time for a possible recount if recounts are necessary. You know, to this ballot maker being overwhelmed by demand.
Shocking.
I did an interview this week with the Columbia Journalism Review, and the reporter asked me, when did you think that voting was going to be a big issue in November?
Probably March.
And I said, well, our primary was March 17th. The primary was canceled. On March 18th, we knew that voting was going to be an issue in November. We just knew it because we all knew the coronavirus was going to be around. It was going to probably spike again in the fall. People were going to look for alternative ways to vote. We have been talking about this since March 18th. And it just amazes me how they aren't ready. Now, this is a unique time, but they had time to get their stuff together. And
yeah, the ballot maker was sort of put in a tough spot because I don't know exactly how that process works, but I would assume they can't just get the presses up and humming until they start getting requests, right? They don't know how many people are actually going to request, but maybe they can put some in the bank. I don't know.
We were saying half of Ohio voters are going to vote early.
Yeah.
Way back in July and August.
But I don't know. I don't know if ballot makers can act on that prediction. Maybe they can. I don't know.
Then don't bid for the contract.
Either way, we have criticized Frank LaRose on this podcast before, especially when he was talking about how he didn't know if he had the authority to allow more drop boxes in counties, and he wanted permission from state lawmakers to do that. Frank, you had the whole summer,
yeah.
And then in late, the very, very end of summer, weeks before the election, you're saying there's not enough time. Well, that's true, but there's not enough time because nothing was done between March and September when this became a big issue.
Yeah, they all just avoided it, ran out the clock, procrastinated, whatever you want to say. In these counties where these ballots have been delayed, they've been delayed now 2 weeks. That cuts the early voting period in half.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a good potential that folks, you know how people are, you get the ballot. Say you have requested a ballot. Finally, the ballot comes to you 2 weeks late. You get busy. You want to rake the leaves. You want to watch the Buckeyes, okay? Mm-hmm. It sits on your counter. You forget about it. All of a sudden, you don't vote because you were late, because you procrastinated 2 weeks, because you have less of a window now.
And now you have an even a shorter window because Frank LaRose saying counties have to count these ballots by November 18th.
Well, they have to be postmarked by November 2nd, the day before the election.
But he's giving again, that's assuming there are no mail delays. That's assuming that everything works out perfectly. The chances of some voters being disenfranchised here, you would think, is high. And I understand that he's trying to allow time for that dreaded R word, the recount, if necessary. It's a tight timeline right now at this point for people who want, especially because you can request an absentee ballot until Halloween. And
yeah, that's not going to work. I mean, you cannot request a ballot the Friday before the election expected to vote.
You would not think
so. Do not do that. And the state officials have said you should be requesting your ballot at the latest a week before the election if you want to vote by mail. So the way that works is you've got to vote by mail. You send in your application, make sure it's correct. The application gets reviewed, then they send you the ballot by mail. You fill out the ballot, you send it back by mail. It has to be postmarked the day before the election if you're going to mail it on November 2nd. And then, even if it arrives after the election, it will be counted so long as it's postmarked on November 2nd. But counties only have 10 days. So if it takes 11 days for your ballot to come in and it comes in 11 days after the election, you lose. That ballot's not going to be counted, even if it is postmarked on the 2nd. So
the whole process has to be done by counties by November 18th.
Yes.
And again, it's a tight timeline for people who voting by mail. You're trusting the U.S. Postal Service, which you can blame whoever you want, but they've had issues in recent months with delivering mail on time.
We'll see.
Democracy is in question for some people.
I mean, if Ohio is as close as it appears as it's going to be, we'll talk about the polls in a minute, but you can see this being a real mess. If the national election is closed and Ohio is closed, you can see us being like Florida was in 2000 with the guy with the big magnifying glass with his eye looking at the hanging Chad. Instead of looking at hanging Chads, we're going to be studying the little swoops on people's S's on their signatures on absentee mail-in ballots.
And we're in a better position than some states like Michigan. They can't start counting ballots or doing anything until the polls close.
Yeah.
We have weeks head start on them.
Yeah.
And Michigan's an important state.
Yeah, Michigan actually, they can start a tiny bit earlier. It's Pennsylvania and Wisconsin that really
I
think Michigan moved theirs up, 24 hours. So a whole day they got a head start.
As you mentioned, the polls are showing a very tight race here. A new Rasmussen poll has Biden with a negligible 2-point lead that's within the margin of error. Fox News gives Trump an equally negligible lead of 3 points.
The polls are consistent. They are very consistent.
They're basically tied.
There's not a tiny bit of daylight between these two. The Fox News poll is interesting because a month ago, that Fox News poll gave Biden a 5-point lead, which I think most of us thought were surprised by.
Is the Fox News poll considered credible?
I think they're all. I think Rasmussen also has some. There's some issues with the Rasmussen poll. They get in the Nate Silver 538 blog. Rasmussen, I think, gets a grade C or B minus, somewhere in there. I'm not sure where Fox News falls in the 538. But in Rasmussen's defense, I believe they were among the most accurate polls in 2016.
Yeah, not many were accurate. Quinnipiac is a poll that we really trust, that a lot of news organizations trust. And their most recent one, again, had the candidates tied. I think Biden had a 1-point lead. And after all this money, we're going to see some more TV ads coming at us in the coming days. They're tied, and we're in such a precarious position as far as who knows what's going to happen.
If it's tied, I think Donald Trump has the advantage. I think there are quote shy Trump voters who are not telling pollsters that they're going to vote for Trump because they perhaps don't like him personally but appreciate his positions. So that, I think, bodes well for Donald Trump. But then again, it all comes down to turnout. If the Democrats can turn out like they did in 2008, 2012, then that's good news for Joe Biden.
You know, we do sometimes on this program talk about the view from Richwood. That's where I live, in rural Union County, very northern part of Union County. And I would say that I have seen what seem to be more shy Biden voters lately. Mm-hmm. Just conversating with neighbors and people at the Dollar General, because we don't have a grocery store.
Yeah.
People, this is very anecdotal, but I have run into a couple people at least lately who I would have thought were voting for Trump but are on the Biden bandwagon at this point. I think it's just Trump fatigue.
How old are they?
My age, late 30s.
Okay, so they're not senior citizens.
No, late 30s.
Because yeah, seniors, I think the polls have shown seniors are, even in rural areas, are drifting more towards Joe Biden than perhaps they had in the past as far as Republican candidates.
Yeah. And you've talked about how in your suburban neighborhood there are a lot more Biden signs than Trump signs. There's still a lot more Trump signs where
sure
I live.
Oh, I'm sure there are. Yeah.
A lot more.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you can see where the candidates are going. Mike Pence is in Cincinnati this week. I think he's going to do an appearance at Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is really to capture, you know, to solidify Indiana perhaps, but also bleed into western Ohio and get some coverage there. The western third of Ohio seems to be where the battle is between Toledo and Cincinnati. If you draw a line down through, you know, Lima.
I-75.
Yeah, that Dayton. That seems to be where the Republicans right now are focusing their attention. Even Joe Biden was in Cincinnati about a week or 10 days ago.
He was in Toledo, too.
Yeah. And so that's where – that's probably the slice of the state to watch on election night, in addition to the Mahoning Valley up near Youngstown, because that – you know, Hillary Clinton did not do as well up there as she had hoped, and that possibly led to her loss in Ohio.
We'll be right back.
Is there something you've always wondered about Columbus? Like,
how did Circleville get its name?
Does Columbus have an accent?
How much has the NRA donated to Ohio lawmakers?
What happened to passenger rail in Columbus?
Curious CBUS is WOSU series that investigates questions submitted by you, our listeners. What have you always wondered about Columbus? Submit a question you're curious about today at WOSU.org/curious.
Welcome back to Snollygoster. After flying under the radar for months, the races for Ohio's Supreme Court are starting to get attention. Of course, we talked about it last week, so we're a bit ahead of the curve.
That's why they're getting attention, because of us.
That's right. We're just saying we had it last week. But anyway, go back in the feed and check it out. Really interesting interview. But now the race has gotten the attention of the man who helped put George W. Bush in the White House.
Someone you might not have thought you'd hear about again in Ohio politics, Karl Rove, is helping raise money for Republican incumbent Justice Judith French. French and her fellow Republican Sharon Kennedy face challenges from Democrats Jennifer Bruner and John O'Donnell. In an email to potential donors, Rove says reelecting French will help Republicans redraw legislative districts next year.
That's the hidden fight in this race. There's a lot of money coming in from both sides because they know that state Supreme Courts could have a big influence on how congressional, more so the state legislative districts are drawn after the next census is complete and the redistricting formulas are set. So that's where the money, that's both sides are putting money into these two races. In the hopes of keeping it Republican, if you're a conservative, or swinging it to the Democrats for the first time since the early 1990s. And it could be a big issue.
Well, kudos to Karl Rove for backhandedly admitting that gerrymandering exists, because this is more than you'll get from most Republicans when you talk about redistricting in Ohio. They'll usually say, we don't have a choice. All the rules corner us into drawing districts the way we – come on. Karl Rove knows
this
just like –
is what Karl Rove said. He says if we don't elect Judith French, the Democrats are going to gerrymander the districts.
Because only Democrats do it, right, Carl?
Yes.
That explains Ohio's congressional map, right? The banana district that – I think that was in the old map, but the old banana that went from Youngstown to Athens.
Yeah. The seahorse. That's the classic one now. Jim Jordan's seahorse district that goes from Union County, your district, all the way up to Lake Erie, down to suburban Dayton. Mm.
There's a lot at stake here. Karl Rove is right in that. Whichever court is formed will have a big say in how Ohio draws its legislative map. It should be a process that is not fraught with politics, but it is that elections have consequences, and both in terms of lawmakers and in terms of the Supreme Court. So Karl Rove is right here. He's being a little snollygoster-y here in that he's trying to help Republicans craft the districts that are favorable to them, but he's right.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about how in the courts, with some legitimacy to their argument, the U.S. Supreme Court has said, no, you know, this is not for us to decide. This is for lawmakers to decide, and ultimately for voters who choose their lawmakers to decide how the process of drawing districts works.
They have thrown out some maps when they decide they're too gerrymandered.
Yeah. And politicians will say, hey, look, the voters chose the lawmakers. Lawmakers draw the map. So if the voters are if they're not pleased with the maps, they can throw out the lawmakers. But voters – It's so complicated.
You're clustering them into ways that it's impossible for them to toss out lawmakers they don't like.
And voters don't say, I'm going to go to the polls and vote against gerrymandering. No, I'm going to go to the polls and vote against tax increases. I'm going to vote on prison and police reform. Gerrymandering is not on the top of their priority list, so they're not going to throw somebody out because they drew a crazy map. But in this race, gerrymandering does seem to be a big issue in the Supreme Court race, more than, say, a race for state rep or governor or state auditor or somebody like that.
You know, we have talked on this podcast before about whether there is a split happening in the Republican Party right now, if sort of the Trump wing is dividing from the more moderate wing. And I would wonder how much of a role the moderate wing wants to take in redistricting, because with districts like the Jim Jordan district, and that's a congressional example, but when you look at legislative maps as well, they've created this ultra divide by making some of these districts so Republican friendly that people have to outright wing each other in the primary, and this divide is sort of what they're left with.
Yeah, I think that if you're a Republican congressman, say like Steve Stivers or Troy Balderson, you would rather try to appease folks in your own party than try to win support from folks in the other party. So I think that they will take the gerrymandered district, even though they have to bite their tongue when it comes to criticizing Donald Trump or perhaps be a little bit farther right on some of the issues than they would like.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. They're creating their own problem in a way when they do this.
Yeah, I mean, they're afraid of a primary opponent. And that's the bed they've made. But I think that if you had to choose between two beds, I guess I'd rather have a tougher primary than a tougher general.
We mentioned Karl Rove is doing some serious snollygostering this week. He did not, though, win our weekly Snollygoster of the Week award, which we hand out to the shrewdest politician or political move of the week.
Yeah, for weeks now, Joe Biden has been asked whether he will expand the Supreme Court and pack it with liberal justices. That's what the far-left progressives want after Republicans have effectively packed the court with conservatives without adding to the 9 justices we've had on the nation's highest court. We've had 9 justices for 151 years now.
Joe Biden has refused to answer that question until now, sort of at least. He tells 60 Minutes in an interview that airs Sunday that he wants to form a commission to study ways to make federal courts less partisan and less political.
The old form a commission trick, the go-to strategy when a politician wants to avoid making a tough decision. Mike DeWine is a big fan of commissions, study committees, working groups, task forces, strike forces.
The repeal of the nuclear bailout also is now being studied by a committee. They must be studying hard. We have not heard much about repealing or replacing it in recent days.
Yep. It's a way to put an issue aside for a while.
So Joe Biden for announcing plans to form a commission to depoliticize the Supreme Court. Good luck there, Joe. You are our Snollygoster of the Week. If you have a suggestion for next week, you can email it to snollygoster@wosu.org. As always, be sure to tell your friends about us. Leave us a good review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. And until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
Yes, for our student producer, Jack Long, our audio producer, Eric French, and our web producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.